to episode number 3 of the Dark Star Astrology podcast. This is your host, Marina Caruso. Today we are going to do an eclipse special since we're now at eclipse number 3 of the eclipse season, which is unusual because usually we only get 2. And this is even more unusual because we're getting a fresh new start of a Saros cycle. I'll explain what that means later on. But it is the birth of a new eclipse cycle, which is really exciting. But we do have an outgoing cycle 2, and that's the one that's dying. And that's why I thought appropriate, let's have Saturn in the background, the Grim Reaper of Death, to send him off. So we'll talk about that one too. I think it's important to know what we're saying goodbye to with the solar eclipse for the 1st of June. Now, eclipses usually have an effect for 6 months, but because we've got 3, I would say that the first one of the bunch, the solar eclipse for the 1st of June, I think may not have such a strong influence as the one that is coming, because it's a dying cycle anyway, but that's just my theory. We'll see. If this one is affecting you strongly, then possibly you'll be concentrating more on tying up loose ends and finishing stuff off. I'm only going to do 1 week of transits for the coming week because both Jamie and I have had crazy dental procedures in the last week, so it kind of slowed us down with our productivity there. It was quite apt that since the last lunation was with the stinger in Scorpio and it was also about removing toxins, I had mercury fillings removed and Jamie had an emergency removal of his wisdom teeth because they were so rotten. So that's why we're behind schedule. But what I will do is do an extra show next Sunday and catch up with the week's transits then, and Jamie will have written also his July forecast by then as well. So instead of that, I thought we'll do a big eclipse special because this only happens every 6 months and triple eclipses don't happen very often either, so let's look at those in detail. Okay, so let's talk about Saros cycles. Now, what they actually are is an eclipse is not just an eclipse in a vacuum. They actually are born at the North or South Pole, and they slowly, over 1,200 years, cross the Earth in an 18-year sequence, and then they end up sort of back to where they came from, and then the family of eclipses dies. They're all numbered, and you can look them up on NASA. If you Google NASA eclipses, each eclipse cycle has a number. When they start, they're only partial eclipses, and as they get down to the equator, they become total eclipses, and then wane off to partial again. So they're almost like coming to a sort of a full moon. And that happens for the solar eclipses and the lunar eclipses. Though the lunar eclipses are a bit different because they're born at the equator. I don't want to get too much into the technicalities. If you want to find out more about Saros cycles, Bernadette Brady's got a really nice CD that sort of explains the whole mechanics of it, and it's very interesting, so I'd recommend that. So what's really interesting is that each of these Saros cycles, each family of eclipse, has a birth chart. So, for example, the June the 1st solar eclipse was born on May the 24th, the year 803. And there's a chart for that, there's a birth chart for that, and that gives this cycle its character and personality. Now, how I've been reading the lunations, because I do them every 2 weeks, I read them the chart for the lunation, and that goes the same for the eclipses too. But what we have with the eclipse as well is we've also got their birth chart too for the Saros cycle that they're on. So how I see this now is really that the eclipses that follow are more like the daughter. So the birth chart is like the mother. This is what gave birth to this idea. And each successive eclipse is like a continuation of the same story, or the same, yeah, it's children of the mother. So it's a continuation of a idea or a meme, like bringing a gene forward and developing it. And genes evolve, don't they, through the DNA. So, yeah, each successive eclipse develops the idea further, I would say. But to get a kind of idea of the feel of the cycle, we need to look at the original chart. So armed with this knowledge now, what I want to do is go back to the interp I did for the solar eclipse on June the 1st. Now this is a waning eclipse cycle. There's actually only 4 eclipses left out of 18. That's 80. So it's coming to the end. It's dying. So I don't think this is a very potent one. Anyway, you know, it's waning. So, but to look at what is dying, we should look to its chart. Now, its chart is very interesting because the moon was conjunct Elnath, which is in Taurus. If you look to the report I did for the solar eclipse on the 1st of June, it was on Aldebaran, which is also in Taurus. So this is all about, holy cow, this is Taurus. Now, if anyone wants to do any research, I'll give you the dates of the last eclipses over the last 4, and there may be a theme. I'm just thinking Europe, just because the first one is April 1939, then the other one is, after that, is April 57, May 1975, and May 1993. I don't know if 1993 was any big treaty signed in Europe, but anyway, if you want to have a look into that, because the only reason I think Europe is because I think of Europa and the mythology of the bull, Zeus turning himself into a bull to seduce Europa, so there may be something in there. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting and worth mentioning. Let's just get back onto the birth chart now. The eclipse is conjunct Elnath in Taurus, which is generally regarded as being a lucky star. And the birth chart of this eclipse has something quite seductive about it, because the dominating pattern is a quincunx between Venus and Pluto, which is very tight, by only 3 minutes. And then Venus is also square Neptune, and then that Neptune is also trine the Pluto. So Neptune and Pluto together are pretty seductive and magical, but also can be leading this sort of innocent little Venus astray as well, promising all sorts of gifts in return for sexual favours, basically. So Jupiter, the seductor, is conjunct the eclipse, and then also the strength of Elnath being conjunct the eclipse as well is really about hard work, and it is toiling with the earth. And the bull pulling the plough is such a graphic description of manual labour and working hard, and enjoying all the benefits of material goods. And really, the archetype that this is describing is really impressing the ladies with material goods and making them feel secure. And in the old days, that's what women relied on. And this is the cycle that's coming to an end. So this is interesting. So the solar eclipse report that I wrote for the 1st of June, I called it Parallel Lives. And the reason I called that was because there was 2 tracks basically there. One side of the tracks was Moon Saturn, and the other side of the tracks was the North Node and Ceres. Now, it's interesting that the birth chart for this eclipse has Saturn and Ceres in conjunct. Now, both Saturn and Ceres are to do with agriculture, because obviously Saturn is the scythe, and the symbol for Ceres actually is a scythe as well, and Ceres is the grain goddess. So what started out as the man and woman working on the land, toiling the land, being sustained by the land and agriculture, and also the whole family, an extended family, were a unit, and they survived by sticking together and working on the land. But that's all changed now. So that's interesting. And they're on two separate tracks now, in the parallel lives. That's what I called the 1st of June report that I did. So it's interesting that they've moved on to parallel lives, and people and families are scattered and distanced from each other. There's not that pulling together in order to survive anymore. That is what's going out. It's a different, we're moving into a different way of making our money, and we're not living off the land anymore. So what we have now is the very raw, manual worker energy, materialistic energy of Elnath moving to Aldebaran, which is far more developed and mature as an energy. It's enjoying the sensual and materialistic side of Taurus, but raising it to a higher level and doing things with integrity and providing practical help to people who aren't as well off as you. So that's how Aldebaran works. So what I think is coming to the end is just being very wasteful with resources. We can't really do that anymore with the Earth. You know, the life of plenty, where there was plenty of land for all of us and there was a smaller population, obviously, in the world, is kind of finished. So what's coming to an end is the gluttony that Taurus can be. And the restructuring also goes for families because, you know, now we don't need to be... The currency is not just strength. The man doesn't have to be the breadwinner. Now, you know, obviously women can work and earn money through modern technology. We don't need the brawn anymore. We don't need the bull to plough our fields anymore. So that's interesting that the bull is such a symbol of physical manpower, essentially. And now, well, we have the technology to earn money without physical strength. Simple as that. So this eclipse was on the 11 degrees Gemini. So if you have a square opposition or conjunction to this within 3 degrees, this one's going to be affecting you strongly. If you have any other aspect to it, I think it really needs to be 1 degree, because generally the hard aspects are the ones that produce some material effect that you can see. Whereas the softer aspects, they can easily just kind of pass you by unless you sort of make something of them. With the harder aspects, you'll probably see something visibly as a result of this eclipse, whereas I think the softer ones you don't. So now on to the eclipse on July the 1st. Now this is really exciting. As I said, this is the new one. It's going to be at 9 Cancer, July the 1st, and it's conjunct the fixed star Alhina in the constellation Gemini, which is a very different feel from our Taurus the Bull. And this is really what I was getting at with talking about information as currency, really, and the technological revolution. Gemini is well in with that one, and that's all about media and communications and information technology too, IT. But it is also square Saturn and opposed Pluto, and these are usually about endings, so that's quite interesting. It's really just saying, you know, there is an eclipse cycle ending and there's a new one beginning. So these, but generally you could sort of say both those aspects, it could make you wonder about this eclipse and make you see it with dread. But fear not, because as I said, this is the birth, so I don't think it can be anything too nasty. Now, as this is the first of a new Saros cycle, in effect, this chart, this reading for this eclipse, is going to be its birth chart too. So we're sort of doing two things in one, and so this is even more important, I would say, than your average reading for an eclipse. So if we were going to be describing the birth of a new baby, well, it would be a difficult one, wouldn't it? Because square Saturn opposed Pluto, it's sort of like life or death. It could be like near, in giving birth to this baby, the mother could have faced death in some way, could have been an emergency caesarean. It just has that feel of being very dicey. You could say it was a bit apocalyptic because of, you know, Saturn and Pluto. But I'm thinking that it's talking about the birth of something that will bring the death of something else. So a dawning of a new era. And this is an intense and powerful Hades moon because of the opposition to Pluto. And it'll be wanting to experience everything really deeply and profoundly. And it's the sort of moon that's willing to confront its shadow and exercise its demons. So it's really apt that the eclipse is on the fixed star Alhina in Gemini, because this constellation is all about embracing both the twins, which is Castor, which is the good twin, and Pollux, the evil twin, supposedly. Now, the fixed star Pollux can be the tortured writer, and Alhina, the theme here is tortured, Alhina is in the heel of Pollux, which is associated with marching for a cause, even if it brings pain. Like the fact that that star's in the heel, it's like a kind of a grit in your shoe sort of type feeling. But generally, Alhina is thought of as a fortunate star, and it bestows artistic talents, especially in communications and the mass media. And it's also beneficial for negotiating peace treaties because it does fall between the two twins. So it's very good at blending the two opposites and creating a novel solution. Well, this fits really well with the eclipse opposing Pluto, because I wrote, as I wrote in Sun opposing Pluto, which is the natal aspect, I wrote that it swings between extremes of light and dark, extrovert and introvert, which is kind of describing the twins really. They are adept, these are the people with Sun opposing Pluto, at pulling the long-buried demons out of the woodwork and shining their glaring solar torch right in their eyes. So these people do enjoy exposing secrets and hypocrisy. So the personality of this eclipse is going to be something like a cross between Madame Curie, Anna Freud, John Hurt and Johnny Rotten, who all have that aspect natally. Now, the twin spokesman Mercury is involved with a trine to Ceres in this chart. So Ceres, of course, had to forsake her precious daughter to part-time underworld action with her dark lover Pluto. So Mercury, in the spirit of Alhina, is negotiating a settlement here and letting Ceres know that it's all going to be all right. So I think this is also very positive. Ceres being on Shiat, the fixed star in Pegasus, just will make her more daring and probably more open to more unconventional domestic arrangements with her daughter. So that makes everything a lot easier. But what about Pluto? If you look at the chart on the website, four aspects fan out from him. One is a quincunx to Mars, which of course is a sexual aspect. If it was a square, I would say, you know, it could be sexual abuse, but I think the quincunx to Pluto from Mars, it just makes it kind of kinky, but at the worst it could make it bitter and twisted. So I think this is sort of adds a mildly sadistic touch to the moon, to the birth chart of this moon, so there's a touch of sadism in there. But, you know, it kind of goes with the Hades moon, because the Hades moon thrives on that kind of intense experience. Even if, you know, pain is involved, they just like to get right into it. But the thing is, giving birth is painful. So maybe Alls is saying that this is facing life. Life is painful and giving birth is painful, and anything worth its salt is going to be painful as well. So that's just describing life as it really is. And talking about the gritty reality of things, the other aspect is the very solemn square from the moon to Saturn. Now, I do like Liz Green's take on it. She writes this about the moon to Saturn in her book Saturn, A New Look at an Old Devil. She writes, "It's often very dangerous to assume that one has the right, because of blood ties, to command emotional support from others. Parents can die, partners can leave, and children grow up. And the person with Moon Saturn is generally courting pain and disappointment if he seeks to bind these external things to himself by emotional need." So that goes very much with this moon, the painful letting go of attachments. I think this is all about gut-wrenching emotional decisions regarding obsession and possession. Now, what adds to this also is that we have to take an account of, as Saturn is so important to this moon, well, what star is it on? It's only 10 minutes from a conjunction to Gina, which is the biggest star in the Crow. Now, there is also, Saturn has been on Algarab, which is the other star in the Crow. Well, I regard Gina to be the slightly more magical, less tricky version of Algarab. Algarab to me is a bit more fiendish. So it's fantastic really that we do have the help of the fixed star Alhina in the twins to help deal with the tricky Crow, because if anybody knows how to deal with tricky energy, it's the twins. And another thing also is, let's just hope the practical, magical side of the star is brought out by Saturn, because Saturn is also with Porrima, which is in Virgo. And the interpret for this by Robson isn't too great. I mean, it's sort of a mixed bag. It says, intelligent, studious, but then home troubles in early life, evil environment, liable to imprisonment, suffers through conspiracy of friends or relatives, domestic disharmony, sickly children, home broken up, or death in prison. So are we getting a message here of not very good for domestic happiness really there? And very morbid. So the last thing you want is Saturn being on a star like that in square to the moon as well. So it looks like a bit of a homewrecker, this one. So, I mean, this could also be, you know, if we were looking at what's dying, is what we regard as the traditional family. It is no longer. And so, yes, indeed, this moon is a homewrecker in that sense. It provided us with security, but it also forced us into a situation where there was no freedom at all, either. Divorce was not an option, because if a woman left a man, she'd be probably destitute in the old days. So she stayed with her husband, even if he beat her, just for financial reasons, and same with the children. Now, of course, the option to leave the family is there, in the Western world anyway. So it is a bit of a home-wrecking star. So this is maybe just be describing the new paradigm for families, which is, yeah, there is a bit of a home-wrecking element to it, because you're not stuck in traditional roles here. Things can change, but with change, you know, there's a little bit of unsettlement too, and also a period of adjustment as well. I think this is also describing a new form of family unit as well, because now if we look at Lilith, see, she's square this eclipse. Lilith square the moon. I mean, that's home-wrecking too, and it's the baby snatcher. So that's an interesting element. It makes this moon about really lovers versus mothers, dark goddess versus light goddess. And again, you know, about the two polarities, how it's about recognizing how we polarize and demonize our shadow selves. And the card I picked for the eclipse was the Queen of Cups, and the Queen of Cups is also Lilith, and it's also Scorpio. The archetype is the Scorpionic woman, and it's fixed water, which is obviously the frozen ice of Scorpio. So she is the watery dark goddess, and that's why I've titled this blog Black Ice Peace, as a play on black-eyed peas. But yes, Black Ice Peace. Now, I just think this is about, well, the Queen of Cups as a card is about thawing long-stashed feelings that have been sort of buried and, you know, and are sort of black ice, really, in the depths of our souls, and bringing them up for plutonic transformation. It can be stagnant. I just think it epitomised kind of stagnant iced water that is just solidified and it just needs moving. Well, it needs purging, really. It's like colonic irrigation. It just needs flushing out. So the Queen of Cups is really good at doing that. Interestingly, talking about water, the asteroids who are in conjunction with this moon as well. The first one was asteroid Xanthi, which is conjuncted, and Xanthi was one of the Oceanids in Greek mythology, one of the 6,000 children of Oceanus, the god Oceanus, and each was appointed a particular spring, pond, lake, river, or even a cloud, anything that bears water, really. So that goes very well with the cleansing theme, cleaning. It also means fair-haired beauty in Greek as well. And then the other asteroid was Lampeter, which is the personification of light. Lamp. So although these are mere asteroids, I just thought it was interesting that we get these kind of cleansing and lightening. It's almost like bleach, isn't it? Like bleaching out the dirt to counteract the sort of deep, dark pockets that are found elsewhere in this chart, really, and to counteract, well, basically the Pluto and the Saturn and the black ice. So, yeah, we needed those. But one thing I didn't go on about in the blog, because, to be honest, I didn't notice this, because I draw up these charts as Huber charts and they don't put down the aspect to Lilith. It's sort of deliberate because I want to keep true to the Huber system, and they don't like Lilith, but I do. So I stick Lilith in there to have a look to see where she is, but I don't want to screw up the aspect patterns, which are integral to how Huber works. But you see, if this was a dark goddess reading, we would have a T-square to the eclipse from the black moon Lilith. But she's also opposite Saturn, which does emphasize the home wrecking and the feminist side of this moon and the dark goddess power here. So of course I'm going to be excited about that one, especially since that really goes with the card that I picked as well. Now, I didn't cheat with this card, honestly. I picked it and that's what came up, so that's very strange synchronicity there. So really we're talking about the birth of some sort of dark goddess movement with this eclipse, and it's funny that I should decide to start looking into Saros cycles just as a new one is being born with a dark goddess feel to it, which is quite strange synchronicity. Actually, the only reason I knew about it was I mentioned something to Gary Caton, because I was looking into them, and I was asking him about one that's coming that is going to be on Algol. But he corrected me and said, no, that's not the one. The cycle that we're on is actually a brand new one. And I went, oh, okay, I better look and see what that means. But what got me into the whole thing, was the fact that there was one coming up on Algol. So I thought that was a sign. So yeah, this is all very strange synchronicity and very eclipsy. So as I said, I did pick the tarot card, the Queen of Cups. which is the Dark Goddess archetype as well. So yes, it was really good that we did get two kind of light asteroids, which balances things out a little bit. And of course, you know, the twins are all about balancing the light and dark as well. I do think it's a positive one, but I think that it comes with a price. So, you know, if peace is going to be negotiated, there's really going to have to be a painful letting go of something in order to gain this peace. It might be giving up something material for something higher to happen, really. Actually, yes, I've just noticed that Venus is conjunct the South Node. I mean, it's not very tight. 3 degrees, yeah, should we count that? Yeah, we should. And, you know, that really does fit with the whole thing about letting go of things from the past. The South Node is letting go, and Venus is material stuff. And, of course, the outgoing Saros cycle, the eclipse of June the 1st, is very Taurian, with Aldebaran the Bull, and of course Taurus is ruled by Venus too. Now the next eclipse I want to look at is the, I think, very important one of June the 15th, which was a lunar eclipse, and it was a total lunar eclipse, and it was at 24 Sagittarius. So anyone with Virgo, Gemini or Pisces at 24 degrees would have felt that really strongly. And this was the one that was on the fixed star Lezath, and I think this one will be felt strongly for quite a while to come, because it was a total lunar eclipse. Now, this is the one that, of course, was on the Stinger. The North Node was on Ras Al Hayy, and this is all about poisons, basically, kill or cure. So, if you haven't already, I would urge you to listen to last week's show, because that goes into it in far more detail. But I wanted to look at where this has come from. Now, obviously Mars was on Algol on this one. But as I said, I didn't find anyone too fearsome with Mars on Algol. But it's interesting that in its birth chart, Venus is on Algol. Now, two people that have Venus on Algol, or did, was Princess Diana, who could not ignore suffering. And that's what this star really means. And her son has inherited that as well. William has that, and of course he suffered the loss of his mother at a very young age. Now there is a kind of medical theme in this, because Neptune, which is all about self-sacrifice and can be about institutions and hospitals as well, that was quincunx the North Node, and the North Node was still on Ras Al Hayy, which is the medicine man as well. So there's that, and then there's Uranus trining that nodal axis as well. And Uranus is about the Kundalini as well. Now, there's something very slinky and charming about this eclipse as well. So there's certainly some sort of sexual healing involved, perhaps. And the thing with Algol as well, I just think there's something magical and shamanic and something to do with healing in a magical sense. And in the way that actually Diana, her life is very Neptunian, she has a very Neptunian chart, and she seems to epitomise this very well, this eclipse. Now, even the star that it was on, Mirzam, which is in Canis Major, that star is, it's charity, it's good qualities, it's faithful, the faithful dog, but it does have violent and dangerous passions. And as we all know, Diana had her dark side too. So, plus she was also a dab hand at the media, and this star is known as the announcer star because it announces the arrival of Sirius, and you do find it in broadcasters as well. So that all sort of fits together into the eclipse story now. So if I was going to sum up its birth chart, I would say that it's a very excitable chart. It's like it's announcing new discoveries, and those discoveries will be of a sexual nature or possibly medical. But there's a Kundalini influence as well, and also a very seductive influence too. So for this to have given birth to the Lezath moon, well, that goes quite well, really, because Lezath is the sting of the scorpion, and of course that is sexual too. So those marry quite well. What I think it may mean all in all is the influence of exploring Eastern techniques for sexual healing, which is of course Kundalini yoga, and things to do with tantric sex as well, which is of course all about sex for enlightenment. So just to refresh, the eclipse to really look out for as far as what's going to affect us in the next 6 months, I think, is the 15th of June eclipse, which is Saros Ceres 130. That is on Lezath in constellation Scorpio, which is the stinger in the tail of the scorpion. And that one is at 24 Sagittarius, and I did a special on that last week. Then the next one to look for is the one coming on July the 1st, which is a brand new Saros cycle, and it's going to be number 156. That one is at 9 Cancer, and it's conjunct the fixed star Alhina in the foot of Pollux in the constellation Gemini. So those two together have a really nice... they've got an edge. They really have an edge. They're not going to be easy peasy, but I think they're very sexy. So I like those. I like them both. They're interesting. There is an edge to them. That's all I can say. But I think they will be moving us forward in our soul's evolution for sure. And I think they fit with the paradigm shift very well too, which is, you know, moving from a more left brain way of thinking to a more right brain intuitive way of thinking. Okay, that brings us to the end of our eclipse special. Now, I thought we'd have a little bit of a change to our usual routine. Not that there's been much of one so far, as this is a new podcast, but my intention was to do these every 2 weeks. But since we've had so many teeth problems, and also because of this unusual eclipse, I thought, well, we'll do an eclipse special this week, and I'll do an extra program next week. Instead of coming back to you in 2 weeks, I'll do an extra program next week where we can catch up on the celestial weather and do the sort of more general podcast that I normally do, and talk about other things that we have on our site as well. But let's just look ahead for the next week until I get back to you again. So the astrological forecast starting on Sunday the 26th of June till Sunday the 3rd of July. Right at this minute we have in the sky a square from Uranus to the Sun, which is very electrifying. Expect the unexpected, shocking news perhaps. Now this is actually the base of what the Hoobers call a UFO aspect pattern. And this is quite a funny one because there's also Mars and Jupiter. They're all about sort of 4 degrees thereabouts in a row of semi-sextile. So it goes the Sun at 4 Cancer, Mars at 3, well, 4 Gemini really, Jupiter at 4 Taurus, and Uranus at 4 Aries. Now, for the Hoobers, this generally works as a cloaking device, and you can sort of go around picking up information without being discovered. Now, I'd like to just have a laugh with it and say it could actually mean there may be some UFOs, dare I say it, hovering around in the next 3 days. Or just watch out for crop circles, you never know. It might actually come about as a literal interpretation. But otherwise, I think it's a good time to go undercover and go and discover secrets without people knowing if you need to. Now, also, we do horoscopes on Dark Star, but because we're not we're not traditional tropical zodiac fans. What we do is our horoscopes are based on the transits of the personal planets to your sun. So, and they're divided now into decans. We've started doing that, so you'll be able to get a more accurate take on what Mercury, Mars and Venus and also the lunations are doing to your sun. So where is the sun in visual astrology? Well, he's waiting in Gemini for, in 5 days' time, his lady, the moon, will be coming to join him there on the fixed star Alhina. But at the moment, he's on the foot of the good twin, Castor. So this is a good time to put forward intelligent ideas, which are reasonable, and they will win because of their intelligence. So this is winning by reason and clever logic, which is very to do with Mercury and Gemini. Now, I don't really want to confuse you all by saying their coordinates in tropical, because then you'll be going, but they're in Cancer, whoa. You can easily look that up if you want to know where things are in the ephemeris, if you want to know where they are in your chart. But I like to do this visual thing, because it gets you looking. If you look up in the sky at night, you will see that Mercury is still in the twins. It's very near Pollux. So we have we're very much being influenced by the two twins at the moment. So good and evil, polarities, building bridges between opposites and so on. Well, obviously you'll be feeling the effects of the eclipse that's coming right now, because Saturn's moving away from Porrima now in Virgo, but it's moving towards Gina, which is in the Crow, which I talk about, which I've already mentioned about in the eclipse. But I do think it's important to know where the outer planets are, just so that you're aware of where they are. In your chart, Saturn, the planet of tests and obstacles, is at 10 Libra, so you might be feeling a bit of heaviness there. Also the other cardinals, but I think Libra obviously will be feeling it the most. I mean, generally there's no massive aspect patterns from the outers really to worry about in this next week. But of course we've got the eclipse, so that's enough to be dealing with. On July the 2nd, there's a quincunx between Mercury and Neptune, which I think will bring out the trickster energy. So watch out for deception, watch out for swindlers, and things may not be as they seem on the outside. I think it might really mean a testing time for anyone who is prone to be a bit deceptive or liars, really, because Saturn is going to be testing and it's going to be getting closer and closer to that Crow, Jenna, over the next week. So testing times. So honesty is the best policy in the next week. No shady dealings, because I think it'll backfire. The lead up to the eclipse, as far as the moon is concerned, the moon is in the constellation of Aries at the moment, and it's coming up to Hamal. In fact, it is conjunct Hamal today. So that's a very passionate moon, well starred for a last bit of raunch on Sunday night tonight before the working week. So enjoy the sexy Hamal moon tonight, I reckon. And Mars is travelling through the sensual bull still, halfway between Alcyone and Aldebaran, so bang in the middle of the bull there. Watch out for that Moon-Mars conjunction on Tuesday night in England. America will get that later, the day later. Because the Moon is already conjunct passionate Hamal, it would be best to avoid any conflict on those 2 days. If you have to discuss something with someone who you know is liable to lose it, I would avoid them until the weather calms down a little bit, really. But if you're on a date those 2 nights, things should go very well in the bedroom department. So if you want to bed someone, that's the night to do it, as everyone will be feeling quite frisky, shall we say. Also, I think the energy in the air is quite electric. especially the eclipse that we're getting on July the 1st, the new start. So it's all, I think there's a lot of anticipation in the air and excitement building before this eclipse. And also frisky Jupiter is moving into Aries, well, constellation Aries as well. He's just really past Sheraton, the star in the head of Aries. So there is a real feel of the sap rising and new starts building up here, I think. Jupiter's position in the tropical zodiac, for those who want to place it in your chart, is at almost 5 degrees Taurus now. So that means you, Taurus, is born between the 21st of April and the 30th, are going to be feeling it the most strongly. So you should be feeling more optimistic and bouncy and have more energy and general hopefulness and faith in the future. Okay, that brings us to the end of our eclipse special and our week ahead. I will do a fill-in show in a week's time to cover the week that I should have done, and to bring us up to the next lunation. So watch out for that one, it'll be on a Sunday again. Alright then, this has been your host, Marina Caruso, for Dark Star Astrology Podcast, and I'll speak to you in a week's time. In the meantime, enjoy the coming eclipse. But before we do, let's wave Saros Series 118 off into the sunset with, very aptly, Saturn by Holst ticking the clock, and time is running out for you. It's on its way out.